We're beginning here in the middle of Mem Yimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara here is continuing to be Doresh, the Psukim in Bamidbar Perek Yutet, Parshat Hukat, with regards to the Para Aduma. In the Psukim, the subject of the Psukim changes all the time. We've seen that it's Elazar Kohen, it's Kohen, it's Ish, it's Tahor. All these changes, the Gemara says, lead us to a possibility of different individuals being able to participate at different times during the process of the Para Aduma. So now we're up to Va'asaf Ishtohor et Efer HaPara. So a Ishtohor, a person that is pure, gathers together the ashes of the para, v'niach, and then he places them down. Ish lachshir et azar. Ish comes to tell you that it's a zar is allowed to do this process, because in contrast to that, the previous psukim deal with a kohen. So ish, in contrast to kohen, would permit a zar versus a kohen that demands there be no zar involved in this. Then, tahor, lachshir et aisha. And why do you need Ishtohor? Tahor, of course it's Tahor, as Rashi says, because the Para Aduma is called a Chatat. So of course you would need people that are Tehorim to do it. So therefore, Lachshir et Aisha, Tahor is an extraneous word that comes to tell us that an Isha may do this as well. Ve'niach, so that's the latter half of that Pasuk. Vasaf Ish Tahor et Efer Para, Ve'niach, Michutz Lamachaneh B'Makom Tahor. Ve'tal Adab Bnei Yisrael, L'mishmer, L'meinidah, Chatat Hi. So that Ve'niach, Mishyej Bo Dad L'haniach. Only someone who has the capacity to intentionally place something down, that they don't have the capacity to do things with intention. We have a Mishnah in Masechet Parah that says, Hakok Sherim Lekadesh. When it comes to the Kiddush of the Efer HaChatat, which means taking the ashes of the Chatat and putting it together with the Mayim, with the water, so there, that Kiddush can be done by anybody, Chutz Micharesh Shoteh V'Katan, with the exception of these three individuals who don't have Dat. Rabbi Yehuda Machshir B'Katan, Rita says a katan is allowed. Uposel bi isha mundroginus. He says that an isha may not do it, and an androginus who's a safek isha also may not do it. My time of the Rabbanan. Let's understand the position of the Rabbanan first. Dichtiv, because it says in the pasuk later on about what you do with the ashes. It says v'lachu l'tamei me'afar srifat ha-chatat. You'll take for the tamei from the ashes of the chatat. V'natan alav ma'im chayim el keli. And then you'll put it onto the waters that are inside of the kli. Over here, Rashi says that the individual puts the ashes and then puts the water on top of them. Whereas Tosafot points out that that's not the case, because generally we say that the ma'im has to go into the ma'im chayim el keli. The water has to be in the kli itself, touching the kli itself. And then only afterwards did you put the ashes on top. But either way, that mixture of the water and the ashes, it says here, V'lachul de tamei me'afar srifat ha-chatat, hanach de pasli lecha be'asifa, pasli lecha be'gidush. Whatever was problematic before, in terms of the asifat ha-efer, will also be problematic in terms of the kiddush. Because it says, V'lachach, and it gives you no subject of the sentence. Well, since it gives you no subject of the sentence, the assumption is that it's the same subject as was before. It's the assumed subject of the sentence. And the last thing that we discussed was the asaf ish tahor. So whatever is true of the asifa will also be true here of lachu. And whoever was okay or permitted to do the asifa can also do the kiddush. So we saw before with regards to the asifa that ish comes to say a zar is okay. Tahor comes to say that an isha is okay. Heiniach, I'm to tell you that a katan is precluded, or a chereshotev and katan are precluded. So because of that, the Rabbanan's position is with lachu, Latamei, that lachu is relying on the subjects of that previous statement. It's a number of psukim away, but it's the assumed subject here, and therefore whoever is pasul or kasher there is also pasul or kasher here. Yehuda, in kain lemak rav lakach. If that's true, the pasuk before, pasuk tet, that says, vasaf ish tahor, is written in the singular. Over here we're talking about in pasuk yudzayin, it's written in the plural, v'lachu. So how could you say the assumed subject is the same subject as before, if there it was singular, and over here it's in the plural? So my v'lachu dafilu katan. Lachu comes to tell you that's more than the individuals before. What's more than the individuals before? Well, those individuals plus v'lachu means even the katan. The paslucha hatam ha'cha kasher. Over here it's kasher. Isha minale. What about isha? How does he eliminate isha? Lachu is only more inclusive. It doesn't exclude anybody who was kasher before. And we said before that a woman is allowed to do the asifata efer. Because the continuation of the pasuk says lachu da tamei me'afar srifat ha'chatat v'natan alav ma'im chayim el keli. Vinatan velo natna. Natan is written in the male form and not in the female form. Tosafot jumps on that right away and says the entire Torah is written in default as a male form. How can you prove anything from the fact that it's a male conjugation and not a female conjugation? So Tosafot says over here there is a reason to believe that it's more specific. In general, you're right. We can't be medayeg anything from the fact that it's written in the male form. But over here, because it says velachu, And then it changes to v'natan. Over there, we're going to say that it was specific, and there's a reason it's written as natan. It could have said v'lachu v'natnu. The fact that it doesn't say v'natnu and puts in v'natan, over there we're going to be midayek, that it is in the singular male form, and therefore it comes to preclude an isha. Rabbanan say, ikatav rachmanan v'lachach v'natan. If you want the pasuk to write, like you're saying, Rabbi Yehuda, to say v'lachach v'natan, to accomplish what we want, hava amina, I would have thought, ad shakil chad v'chayayiv chad. I would have thought the same individual has to do the kicha, has to do the taking of the afer, also has to do the netinat ha'afer into the water. I would think it has to be one individual does it from beginning to end because it says v'lakach v'natan. So kadar rachman alachu. So therefore the Torah writes v'lachu to teach you that's not the case. The person who is doing the kichah is not connected to the person who does the netinat. So ikatav rachmano. So then if you want it to be consistent this way, v'lachu v'natnu, so then let it be consistent and be in the plural in both cases. Havamina ad shakli trei v'avi trei. I would think you need two people to do the kicha and two people to do the netina. So therefore, Havadar Rachman of Lachu v'natan. It gives you this incongruous singular and plural form to teach you. Dafilu shakli trei v'avi chad. Even if two people take it and one gives it. From that, we learn all these pieces of information. Number one, that the people who take it don't have to be the people who place it, because that's written in plural and that's written in singular. So by definition, it doesn't have to be the same people. In addition, it teaches you that the individuals that do it can be individuals. You don't have to have two people doing it in both cases. You can have one and one. So that's learned by the change from the plural to the singular. But otherwise, this pasuk follows the previous pasuk, the pasuk Vasaf Ish Tahor, and tells you that everything's the same. Isha is Kshera, Katan, Charesh, and Shoter are all psulim. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda believes that the Lachu tells you to separate from the previous pasuk and comes to include something new. That something new is a Katan. V'natan is written in the male, it switches from lachut to natan, that comes to teach you that a female is precluded from doing this part of the process. V'lakach, now the next thing that we have in Pasuk Yichai, V'lakach is zov v'taval b'mayim. So he takes the zov, the hyssop, and he dips it into the water, ish tahor, this has to be an ish tahor, v'zala oil, and then he does the haza'ah. So here it says ish tahor. Why would you say ish tahor? All you have to do is be silent. If you're silent, we would include anybody else who was there before. Ish tahor already comes to tell you you have to do something different than was before. And so for that reason, the Rabbanan and Rabbi Yehuda will have positions now that change from the previous statement, which is the Rabbanan ish velo isha. Over here, for the tevilat ha-ezov and azah, you require a man and not a woman, because before a woman was permitted. Now Ish comes to say that's not the case anymore. Tahor, lakshirata katan. Katan was precluded before. Tahor now becomes an inclusionary term to say that the katan is permitted in this case. Ulu Rabbi Yehuda, Ish velo katan. In the previous case of lakhu, katan was permitted. Therefore Ish now comes to say Ish and not katan. Tahor, lakshirata isha. Until this point in time, Isha was precluded according to Rabbi Yehuda. So now Tahor comes to say that Isha is included and she can do it. So the next Pasuk, Ish Tahor, will turn out to be the exact opposite of their positions in Pasuk Yud Zayin. So whatever they believe by the taking of the Afer plus the Kiddush Afer, the exact opposite will take place when you get to V'lakach Ezo V'taval B'mayim, when you dip the willows into the water and you do the Azah. So for Rabbi Yehuda, who says before then Isha is Psula and a Katan is Kasher, over here will be just the opposite. A Katan will be Pasul and Isha will be Kshera. On the other hand, for the Chachamim, who said before then Isha is Kshera and a Katan is Pasul, over here the Katan will be Kasher and the Isha will be Psula. Made today, we have a Mishnah in Parah that says, Akok Sherim Lazot. When it comes to Azah, anybody can do Azah. Chutz, Mitumtum, Bandroginus, V'isha. Oh, these three people are excluded. V'katan, Sheyesh Bodat. Or the other girsa is, V'katan, She'ein Bodat, Isha Misayato. A woman can help him along. So from here, it sounds like a katan is permitted, and an Isha is not permitted. So that would be like the position of the Chachamim. The position of the Chachamim by, V'lakach Ezov, V'taval Maim Ish Tahor, and then V'hizah. That Azah is guided by the Ish Tahor. The Ish comes to tell you that the Isha that was permitted before is now not permitted, and Tahor comes to tell you the Katan that was not permitted before is now permitted. So that's exactly what is said in this Mishnah, Umazeh, and they can do the Azah. Velo Palig Rabbi Yehuda. And where is Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda is not here to argue on this. Rabbi Yehuda should be arguing on this Mishnah based on what we said before. Rabbi Yehuda Damar Mar, Mashmi Motzim Miyad Mashmi, Mashmi Mevo Palig. We know already that the way that this Parsha works is certain things, each subsequent pasuk eliminates the previous pasuk or changes the definition of the previous pasuk, and therefore if Rabbi Yehuda's position is different in the previous pasuk, then this is going to change it in this pasuk. And so by definition, he has to argue over here, because otherwise what is he going to do with the Ish Tahor? And therefore, Abaye says he definitely argues, even though it's not mentioned explicitly in the Mishnah. Tosafot points out, and in Tosefta it says that Rabbi Yehuda says that it's fine, and it's explicit in the Tosefta. So he says, maybe the Amora speaking here did not know of the Tosefta, wasn't aware of the fact that Rabbi Yehuda argued in the Tosefta. Now the Gemara continues and says, V'iza ha-tohor al-ha-tamei. That's the final stage, which is the hazaav of the tohor al-ha-tamei. What does it mean, tohor? Tohor michlal shu tamei. Tohor means that he's not completely tohor, because why would you have to tell me that he's tohor? Of course he should be tohor. So that's why, michlal, that he must be some sort of tumah. He's not completely tohor, but he's kind of tohor. Tosafot says he doesn't understand what the avamin of the Gemara is. Why would you ever think that there's a problem of a tameh doing it? Why do you need a pasuk to teach us that a tameh can't do this? There's no reason why a tameh can't do this sprinkling over here. So he says, maybe because the pasuk before it says, v'niyach b'makom tahor, that you place the ashes in a place that's tahor, that the person who engages with that also has to be tahor. This says, maybe that's why the Gemara feels that the default status would have been tahor. Therefore, I need a limud from the pasuk to teach me that he isn't completely tahor. From here, the Gemara says, l'meid al tvul yom shekasher bepara. Teaches us that a tvul yom can do the para, because he's not completely tahor, but he's partially tahor. So on the seventh day of Tumah, of Borei, Tumat Meit, or by Tumat Sheretz, by a day's Tumah, if they go to the mikveh, until the sun sets on that last day, they're considered to be a Tvul Yom. That Tvul Yom can do the Maseha Para. And that's what we said before, that Stukim disagree with the Prushim here. The Chalamim intentionally were Mitameh, the person who worked with the Para, in order to be Mikayim this Pasuk and disprove that Stukim. Tosafot brought down a day that was only a Tumah de Rabbanan. Rashi said it was a Tumah de Oraita. The question that Tosafot asks over here is, how do you know it means Tvul Yom? Maybe it means Mechuser Kippurim. Mechuser Kippurim is someone who has finished their old days of Tara. They went to the Mikveh for the sunset, but they have to make a Korban to finish up their Tara process. Why don't we say that's the person who is here? They're not completely Tahor, they still have that last stage. He says, because the context of the Parsha is Tumat Meit. By Tumat Meit, there's no Mechuser Kippurim. So it doesn't make sense to be talking about Mechuser Kippurim in the Parsha of Tumat Meit, when there are no korbanot that are brought for Tumat Meit. It's only para aduma. It's only 7 days of Tumah, mikveh, and then sunset on that last day become tahor. So because of that, they said Tvul Yom is what is permitted over here. Amar Rabbi Asi, Ki'ava ba Rabbi Yochanan v'Reish Lakish b'para. Rabbi Yochanan v'Reish Lakish were darshaning or discussing the issues of para, or this parsha of para. They only were able to take out of it that which a fox takes out of a plowed field, meaning minimal amount. They said a similar statement to what Ula mentioned before, which is that there's no consistency within the parsha. Sometimes when you have a subject or a term used here, that's the way we read it. Sometimes the subject comes to negate what was said before, or to contrast with what was said before. That's what we've been saying all along. There's this inconsistent process along the way, where sometimes the pasuk, we read it and say, okay, you have to do dafka this way. Sometimes we say, well, that's in contrast to the previous pasuk, so therefore now it's permitted, as the fact that it was asur before, and they could not find a consistent way to darshan each of the pasukim, but they had to go back and forth, or choppy. Sometimes it was this way, sometimes it was that way, and there was no shita with regards to darshaning the pasukim over here. You needed a misora to understand how to do it in this case. Tani Tanaka made the Rabbi Yochanan, who had a individual brought a braita before Rabbi Yochanan, kol ha-shchitot k'sherot, bizar. Any shchita is kasher bizar, chutz mishel para. Para duma is the only one that's problematic. Throw that braita out. There's no such thing as a problem with a zar doing shchita by para aduma. It's not bad enough that he doesn't listen to a tana, a braita here, and he discards the braita because he thinks it's wrong. He didn't even listen to his rebbe. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with his rebbe and says, so Rabbi Yochanan throws out the braita, but he also disagrees with his own rebbe, and he says that by a para duma, shchita is kshera, period. There is no problem of zar. And that we saw earlier with machloka between Rabbi and Shmuel with regards to para, whether para has a din of kshera bizar, or is it pasul bizar? Shmuel said it was kshera bizar, and Rav said it was pasul bizar. So Rabbi Yochanan is like Shmuel's opinion that it is kshera bizar. Now the Gemara goes on to the last piece of the Mishnah, which is balo etzel paro shnia. He comes to his par a second time to do a second vidui. So maishna bevidui shon delamar b'nei aron am kedoshecha. In the first vidui, he only mentions bado b'ad beito, for himself and his family. In the second vidui, he says bado b'ado ab'ad ha-kohanim. He takes care of the kohanim as well. So why is there that difference between the first vidui and the second vidui? So Gemara says, "Mashna bevidui rishon d'lamar b'nei aron am kedoshecha, mashna bevidui shnei d'amar u'b'nei aron am kedoshecha." Tanet be Rabbi Shmuel, kachi midat adin notenet. That's what makes logical sense. Mutav yavo zakai v'chaper lachayav, ve'al yavo lachayav v'chaper lachayav. It's better first for the Kohen Gadol to attain kapara for himself, and therefore he is now cleansed, and he is someone who has been exonerated. And because of that, now he can come and act as a shliach or on behalf of others. So first he takes care of himself, cleanses himself, is mitaher and mechaper on himself. And then when he comes to the second bidui, he takes care of his brothers, the kohanim, because now as a zakai, he can do much better in terms of helping others. Better that he comes representing them as a zakai versus coming as a chayav as well. And now we'll read the next Mishnah, and we'll continue with the Gemara tomorrow. The Mishnah says, what's the next in the process over here? Shachato. After the second bidui on the pari shechs it, v'kibel b'mizrak et damo, he has to do kavalat adam in the receptacle, v'notno l'mishu emareis bo al arovet arvi'i. He gives it to a kohen to stand there on the fourth row. The fourth row are the marble stones on the floor, so the fourth row, it stands from like here, shebeichal into the heichal, stands on the fourth row, and he mixes the blood, kadesh lo yikrosh, so it won't coagulate, because he now has to do a whole process with the ketoret, and he's going to leave the blood. If he leaves the blood there too long, it will coagulate. So this individual stands there with the mizrak, that has the dam of the par in it, and he keeps mixing it to ensure it doesn't coagulate. So then, in the meantime, what does the Kohen Gadol do? Natal machta, he takes the pan, v'ala l'rosh ha-mizbeach, he goes up to the mizbeach ha-chitzon, upana gechalim elech ve'elech, moves the coals here and there, v'chotet, and then he digs into the center, min ha-ma'ukalot ha-pnimiyot, from the ones that are consumed in the middle, v'yorad, v'enich ha-robed ha-revi'i, sheba'azara, comes down, and he places that on the fourth row of stones, in the Azara. The Mishnah here describes the difference to what he's doing here on Yom Kippur than to a regular day. When he took the coals off the Mizbeach Litzon from the Marach HaShniyah Shel Ketoret, he took it off with a silver pan, and then he poured it into a golden pan to take it into the Mizbeach HaZav. Today, he takes it off the Mizbeach itself with gold, and that he takes into the Kodesh HaKodeshim, partly because the Yom HaKippurim, they use gold for the whole process, partly because Chushah the Kohen Gadol, but the Kohen Gadol doesn't have to do too much work, and lastly, so that on a weekday, they don't waste so much in the way of gold pans, they use the silver and then pour it into the gold. B'chol Yom Chuteh B'shel Arba'at Kabin. Every day, they used to take off 4 kav worth of coals, Umareh L'tok Shlosha Kabin. They pour it into a pan that held 3 kabin, so 1 kav fell away. Hayom Chuteh B'Shlosha Kabin, he takes 3 kav, Uba'ayah Machnis, and he goes straight in with those 3 kav, again, to reduce the amount of work that he has to do. B'yosi Omer B'chol Yom Chuteh B'shel Sa'ah. Every day, he takes 6 kav, a Sa'ah worth from the silver pan, Umareh L'tok Shlosha Kabin, and then he pours into a pan that holds 3, the golden pan. Hayom Chuteh B'Shlosha Kabin, and today he does 3 throughout. Vaya machnis, and then he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with. B'chol yom ha'itak veida. Every day the pan was very heavy or thick. Vayom kala, and today was a much lighter pan. B'chol yom ha'itak yadak tzara. Every day the pan's handle was short. Vayom aruka, and today was a longer handle. Again, the Gemara will discuss in order to aid the Kohen Gadol. B'chol yom ha'itak zava yirok. Generally, the gold that they used was a green gold, Vayom Adom, and today the gold that was used in Yom HaKippurim was a red gold that was a higher quality as well as more beautiful and appropriate for Yom HaKippurim, Divrei Rabbi Menachem. Kol Yom Makriv Pras B'Shacharit. Every day when he brought in the Ketoret, he did half of it in the morning on the Mizbeach Zav, Pras Ben Arbaim, and half of it in the evening on the Mizbeach Zav. Vayom Mosif Malei Chofnav. Today they do an extra fistful of ketoret that they process. Every day it was very fine, the ketoret. Today was extra fine, the ketoret that he took in. Every day when the kohanim go up the ramp to do the avod on the mizbeach itzon, they always turn to the right. So they go up the right side of the ramp, and then they turn to the right, which means they go towards the east. And they come down on the western side because they circumscribe the Mizbeach, and they come down on the right side, which will be the west. Then when they're coming down, because the ramp itself is on the southern side of the Mizbeach, that's the front of the Mizbeach. If you turn to your right, you face the east, and then if you circle around the Mizbeach and come down, you'll be on the western side. Vayom, here there's a machlok about the girsa. The girsa we have is Kohen Gadol Ole Bemtzo, Yored Bemtzo. The Kohen Gadol goes up the middle and comes down the middle to show the Chibab and Yisrael Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you go up in a more explicit way, right up the middle. There's no hanging on the sides. You go up straight, whatever you have to do, and you come straight back down. The other girsa is, Vayom, Ole Bemtzo, Vayored Bemtzo. That the Kohanim, it's not about the Kohen Gadol, it's the Kohanim that help the Kohen Gadol work with the Kohen Gadol. They go up the middle and down the middle, again, for the same reason, to show either the Chavivot of the Kohen Gadol, or to show the Chavivot of Bnei Yisrael on Yom HaKippurim. Vayod Omer, Olam Kohen Gadol, Ole Bemtzo, Vayored Bemtzo, B'chol Yom. Kohen Gadol gets that right or that privilege every day, not just on Yom HaKippurim. Kohen Gadol mekadesh yadav raglav min hakiyor. In general, the Kohen Gadol washes his hands from the kiyor, from the laver. Vayom min hakeiton shel zav. And today he does it out of a utensil, a golden utensil. as Tosafot says on tomorrow's daf, any kli sharet is fine for washing one's hands and feet. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, the olam kohen gadol, mekadesh yadav raglam min hakeiton shel zahav. That privilege was given to the kohen gadol every day, not just on Yom HaKippurim. Chol yom hayu sham arba marachot. Every day there were four pyres there. Vayom chamesh, they add an additional pyre today. Tivi Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi Omer, v'chol yom shalosh. There were three pyres every day. Vayom arba, and they add additional one today, so there are four pyres for Yom HaKippurim. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, v'chol yom shtaim. There were two pyres. Vayom shalosh, and today there are three pyres. The additional pyre is for the coals to take in to do the Toret lifnai v'lifnim. So you have an extra pyre. The question is, what is the default, or what's the standard number of pyres here? That's a machloket we'll get to in 2 days' daf, about how they learn out, or what is the background reasons to why they think there are either two, three, or four pyres on a regular day. Okay, we'll stop over here.